The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear all year. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Broward County, Florida, is Nick Diamond. Nick, how are you?
I'm coming off a pretty bad series here, you know, ended on a high note and a walk-off, but still very disappointed in this team. I expected more, I expected better coming off that Cardinals series. So it ended on a high note, but I'm still very, very disappointed on how this team played.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It's still a rough series despite the ending. Where can folks find you on Twitter, Nick?
We can find me on Twitter at NDiamondMedia.
Awesome. And also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Man, we're going to get into it, but that was bad. That was really bad. The Red Sox are better than that, and they're better than the Blue Jays. So to nearly get swept there, to be in extra innings, nearly drop all four games, pathetic. And so right now we're third place in the American League East, surprisingly just one game out of the division lead after that pathetic showing. And, you know, the pitching stepped up. We're doing the bottom five, so I'll just give Tanner Houck props right now. Wasn't a stellar start, but he was in command, you know, getting outs and pitched, what, six innings or so. Only struck out two. That's why I'm saying wasn't a stellar start. But then Walker Buehler today. Today was the game I had the Red Sox losing. So I got every game wrong. Because I had the first three Red Sox winning, and I was giving Buehler the L in the fourth game until he could prove otherwise. And he went, what, six innings with six or seven strikeouts. Today's game, I saw the other three, but I was driving. I had a three-hour road trip, so I was listening on the MLB app on my way up. But he sounded very much in command. So the pitching stepped up, which is great. That's super important. But the bats... that's the strength of the team right now. And, you know, it's very dynamic offense and they didn't get it done. They did not get it done. And the weather was terrible. And I think that was a big part of it. You got to be tough. And there are going to be other situations throughout the year where you're going to have to show toughness, whether it's physically, whether it's mentally. You have to show up for these games, and they were all winnable games. Your starting pitching gave you a chance to win every single game, and you went ice cold. So not how I thought it would all shake out.
Yeah, I think one team was definitely tougher than the other this week, and usually the home team is supposed to be the tougher one that's used to the elements. You'd think that Red Sox players would be used to that by now, but they let the elements and a lot of other stuff get to them, and it showed in their defense and the bats going cold. It was just really was a pathetic performance against a team that you should be better than. You know, Toronto did make some upgrades in the offseason, and yeah, they locked up Vlad long term. That's great, but you should be better than this team. That's one of those teams that you weren't supposed to worry about this year. They, you know, let them contend for the wild card while you go for the division kind of thing. And they come into Fenway Park and kind of kick your ass. I mean, you won the final game on what was really kind of a squib hit from Trevor Story that just wasn't fielded cleanly. So you kind of got lucky even winning the final game. I did not expect that series to feel that way. So definitely, you know, after the highs from you got from the St. Louis series, this was definitely a big downer. Nick, what about you? How do you feel about how this week went?
I think the most disappointing thing is we were in every game. We probably should have won every game. We could easily be talking about a four-game sweep for the Red Sox if they could just have a few hits in timely spots. And maybe if, you know, Alex Cora pushed the right buttons in some spots. We'll get into that later. But, yeah, I just think it was a poorly managed series. I think it was a poorly executed defensive series. Even though the errors might not have all been there, there were more errors than actual counted errors. So I just think it was a poorly played series against a team that were definitely better than. I think, yeah, like I said, I think it could have been easily a sweep for the Red Sox, but we almost got swept. So it was just a disappointing series altogether.
I know I had the Blue Jays as one of my preseason wildcard teams. Did either of you guys have them in the playoffs?
I had them written down, and then at the last second, I was just about to go with my take on it. I crossed them out, and I went with the Rays. So sure. I don't hate the pick because, like I said, I was about there. But in the end, I just thought the Rays would be the more likely of the two to step up. You know, the Blue Jays, they have a playoff roster every year on paper, like a roster I would feel good about. And I'm not going to lie, when that came to my mind today, I'm like, geez, I had the Red Sox as a playoff team. And then I was thinking, but I have the Blue Jays a playoff team every year and they never make it. Or do we have like Toronto-itis or something? I don't know. It's early and we're overreacting, but you know, you got the White Sox next. This was a golden opportunity to stack some wins. We didn't do it.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know if Toronto will make it as a wild card. I think they will be a little more competitive. I think that there is some truth to what they were saying on the broadcast today, that the Vlad Guerrero extension kind of took a big black cloud off of that clubhouse. And, you know, there's a lot of guys just breathing a sigh of relief now that that's all done. But I don't know. I mean, I still think their pitching is kind of old. And I think they just, you know, showed well this week because the bats on the other side were so cold. But I don't know. I mean, they're going to be an interesting team to follow because we'll see how aggressive they get at the deadline, similar to what I've been saying about Baltimore, that, you know, Toronto could be that one player away where it puts them over the edge. So we'll see what happens. But certainly I hope we never see a series like that against them again, because that was awful. So with that said, we will have to get into the first bottom five list of the season. Unfortunately, it didn't take long to get there, but here we are. Red Sox do lose 3 out of 4. So we're coming in with the bottom five players. So Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who is number five on the list?
I'm going with David Hamilton. And he's not a guy the Red Sox should be relying on, but it seems like they are trying to rely on him in big spots because there's a weird, I don't think you can call it a platoon situation, but when the lineup gets posted, it seems like Cora has to decide, is Hamilton going to play or is Rafael going to play? And, you know, and that basically dictates where Christian Campbell will play. So, you know, if Cora decides it's Hamilton, then Campbell's going to the outfield and Rafael is going on the bench. And if Rafael is going to play, then Campbell will be at second. And Campbell has one hit on this season so far. He's 1 for 18. He's hitting .056. And his defense has been a bit shoddy. He wasn't charged with any errors, but he's not making some routine plays. Casas is digging things out of the dirt. It's not going he's not a very good defender. So there's no upside to that. And then last year, he sort of did have a plus bat throughout the summer, but that's not what we're seeing right now. And it just seems like he's a one-hit wonder. And I don't think he really has a place on the team. And last year, he was kind of fighting for his career. You know, he got called up just kind of on a whim. And then you know, he was given an opportunity, made the most of it. That's kind of what Jaren Duran did really in 2023 when Duvall got hurt. But now I think he sees the writing on the wall. He knows Meyer's coming, and he just doesn't really have much of a future as a major leaguer. And he's a lefty on a team that is just absolutely loaded with lefties. I think we could do a little bit better. You know, the rest of the bench is fine. I mean, Romy Gonzalez has had, you know, some big spots. Rob Refsnyder is still contributing the same exact way he was last year. Just big hits and timely situations. The only value Hamilton brings is the ability to steal bases in a pinch run situation. And I don't think that's good enough. I think you can do better in your lineup from an offensive production standpoint than a guy like Hamilton. And I know I said we're overreacting, but I think he was just off the charts last year, and maybe he's not this bad, but wherever the mean is, it's still not good enough.
Nick, thoughts on David Hamilton?
I just think they don't need to find time for him to be put in the lineup. You know, Cora's gone out of his way to start him. There's no need for it. He's fine as if a guy who gets hurt, you can stick him in the lineup for a few games. He's fine as a pinch runner. But like you said, I think he overperformed last year. I think he's more of a 4A player than he is a guy that you need to find starts three times a week for. He's just not that kind of guy. He's not that kind of a player. He's fine if he gets 40, 50 starts a year, but not if he doesn't need 100 starts. There's no need. And he's playing too much. Let Campbell play second base every day. And stop moving the outfield. We already have too many outfielders. I don't think you need Hamilton to have this many starts. I'm fine with him being the last guy on the team, the pinch runner. You put him in today for Devers, and I think he scored the go-ahead run, or the winning run. So I think he's got some value. He just doesn't need.
Yeah, and you have to remember, David Hamilton was the throw-in player for the Renfro trade. He was the throw-in along with Alex Benellis, who also kind of sucks. So that's one that you can put in the fail column for Chaim Bloom, for those of you who keep score, which I know the Bluminati still do. Yeah, both those players stink. And yeah, Hamilton was a throw-in because he was, as Nick said, he's a 4A player. You know, he's got one tool, and that's his speed. His defense is not that good. You mentioned them trying him out in left field. That scares the hell out of me because he doesn't have the arm to play anywhere in the outfield, not even left field at Fenway Park. You know, he can kind of play second base, but as soon as you put him at shortstop, he's skipping throws. He's making bad throws. He doesn't have the range over there. Look, he was valuable last year because the roster was so putrid that a guy like that was able to emerge. And I think he kind of got himself into the Alex Cora circle of trust that way. And I think that's why we're seeing so much of him. He's one of Alex Cora's guys. Like, Cora loves the speed. He loves that, you know, Hamilton can get on base and wreak havoc. That's the kind of player that he likes. You know, scrappy left-handed infielder. But, you know, in games like this, in series like this, where the bats are already cold and you're starting David Hamilton over some of these other guys in the lineup, like Raffaella, who, look, his bat hasn't been much better, but Raffaella's 23 years old. He's still developing. There might still be something there. David Hamilton's 27 going on 28. I mean, at this point, we know what he is. He's pretty much reached his ceiling. That might have been what he did last year. That was probably his ceiling. So I agree. I'm okay with him being like a last guy on the bench kind of player. That's fine. But this is the problem when you start playing this guy too much. It's like they made the same mistake with Brock Holt. Brock Holt had one really good season off the bench and, you know, made an all-star game. And, you know, it was when the, you know, again, Red Sox had an awful roster, so he kind of emerged. And they made the mistake of thinking he can be an everyday second baseman. And once they made him an everyday second baseman, he got exposed. And pitchers figured him out real quick. And suddenly all of his numbers went down. And he went back to being just the utility guy and eventually was off the team. So I get that Cora likes him. I get the speed is attractive, and that can be a difference maker at times, but he's got to be careful to overexpose this kid because he is a 4A player. He is just a bench player. And when your team is already struggling for offense and you kind of force him into the lineup when you really don't have to, it shows. And it just, the whole lineup goes down as a result of it, because he's just kind of a black hole at the end, at the end. So again, I don't hate the player. I think he's you know, good to have sort of at the end of the bench, but Cora's got to stop with the obsession over playing David Hamilton so much, because he's not an everyday player.
And Nick mentioned on the pre-show, is it really worth taking bats away from Seydon Rafaela? Not that he necessarily has this high ceiling, but I don't think it's doing him any good to be on the bench every third game. And you made a big commitment to this kid, Rafaela. I think $50 million over what, 8 years with a couple of options that bring it up to 68, and you're giving David Hamilton his at bats. I don't like it. And I'm a little annoyed with Rafaela. He doesn't make the list today, but I mean, he struck out in a big spot, I think the ninth inning today to get it into extras. But you still have to try. You can't pull the plug on him. And I don't think David Hamilton over Rafaela is the answer.
Yeah, I agree. And like, part of me is starting to feel for Rafaela a little bit, because he hears the footsteps of Roman Anthony coming. I mean, he knows that between him, Duran, and Willier, he's the odd man out when Anthony's ready. So he already hears those footsteps. Now he's got Alex Cora benching him for David Hamilton, who goes in there and doesn't do anything. He's probably sitting there going, why did I sign this 8-year contract again? Like, I'm suddenly going to lose playing time to, granted, the number one prospect in baseball for one, but I'm losing playing time until then to David Hamilton? Like, how does that make sense? So, yeah, I know people are frustrated with Rafaela's lack of offense, but I kind of feel for the kid, because he's not getting the opportunities he deserves. The manager's kind of screwing him over there a little bit, in my opinion. So,
and Rafaela can steal bases also.
Yep.
So I just don't see the upside.
I agree. Yeah. So with that, we'll move on to number four on our bottom five. Nick, who we got coming in at number four?
I got the whole catching situation. We lost Connor Wong, game one of this series, broken finger. He's probably going to be out for at least 6 weeks. So we're going to have to deal with Carlos Novaez, who went 0 for 11 this series. And, you know, he started off hot. A lot of people were calling for him to start, but I think we just found out he's not that good of an offensive player. He might be an upgrade defensively, but he might be a black hole for 6 to 8 weeks with Wong's broken finger. And Blake Sable had an awful at bat today. I know he was thrusted in there to a big spot, but he's not going to help out this team offensively. They signed Yasmani Grandal, but he wasn't even a guy who was invited to spring training. So he's not been swinging. He hasn't seen live pitching. So he's probably ways away. So it's going to be Carlos Novaez for at least, you know, the foreseeable future here, until Yasmani Grandal can get some at bats, get ready in AAA or wherever he's headed. So I think that 9-8 hole with Navarez and Sable is going to be a black hole for a few weeks here, which is, it's not good.
Terry, thoughts on the catching situation?
Yeah. So I spoke very positively about Narvaez in the early week rotation earlier in the week. And I mean, he ripped what, 3 doubles in the St. Louis series. And let's see, doing the math on the fly here. I guess those were his only 2 hits in the series. So 2 for 7, but the plate discipline looked really good. And I just thought he was seeing the ball well. And I was thinking, man, this guy could be, we might've stole another one from the Yankees. Like we did Whitlock. That was a Rule 5 situation, but you know, this was just a straight up trade. And I'm like, man, did we like unlock something here? And then dude was just ice cold like the rest of the team. So I'm not ready to pull the plug. I mean, he very well may not be, you know, a major league level catcher, at least from the offensive standpoint. So we'll see what happens, but it's pretty ominous. I mean, we signed Yasmani Grandal today to a minor league deal, so you have to believe he's coming up. Sable was just clearly overmatched in the ninth inning today for the third out to send it to extras. The Rafael at bat was right before his that I just mentioned a moment ago. But man, suddenly our catching situation isn't good. And I was so frustrated with Connor Wong. I'm not going to lie. Not getting on. Wong had a 0-for-19 hitless streak. In 14 of those 19 at-bats, there was a runner in scoring position. So healthy, unhealthy, we just haven't been getting anything out of catcher right now. And I don't know if it's going to change or not. Maybe we'll just take the good defense, but we'll see. Unless Grandal has something in the tank, then okay, maybe we'll salvage that spot in the lineup.
Yeah, who knows what you're going to get out of Grandal. I mean, he was serviceable last year with Pittsburgh, but that's really all you can say about him at this point. It's bad. I mean, put that along with first base is two positions, you know, in terms of depth that the Red Sox decided to kind of ignore this offseason. You know, they let Reese McGuire go. They let Danny Jansen go. And, you know, they brought in Narvaez, who I liked too. I liked him at the time, you know. Seems like a good defender. Maybe there's a little bit there with the bat, but he had a horrible series. I don't know if him and Crochet got on the same page there because he shook him off three times and then threw that meatball cutter to George Springer that kind of decided that game. So that's not a good sign. Blake Sabol, I mean, he has a little bit more of a bat, at least from his history, but can't throw runners out. Looks like he's a horrible defender behind the plate. So you've kind of got, you know, one guy who's more defensive-minded, one guy who's more offensive-minded, but neither of them are really masters of anything. So it's not looking good. And as much as Connor Wong was struggling, you knew at least that, like, he could probably pull himself out of it at some point. You know, at some point he's going to run into, you know, a meatball down the middle and he's going to send it over the fence. And his defense was, you know, pretty good behind the plate. Now you don't know with either of those guys. I mean, yeah, Narvaez flashed a little bit against St. Louis, but everyone did. St. Louis has horrible pitching. All of a sudden, good pitching comes in, and, you know, he looks lost out there. So it's not a good look. They're probably going to have whoever is playing catcher is going to hit ninth every day, and it's just going to probably be automatic outs for the most part. So not a good time for that to be happening when the offense is already struggling, but this is what you get when you don't address that depth in the offseason, you know, and there were free agent catchers out there that they could have brought in for low money that, you know, could have served as good backups or even good platoons. You could have gotten a guy like Gary Sanchez, who, yeah, a lot of fans don't like him, but he's got a rocket of an arm behind the plate and he's got a little bit of power. He's at least a professional hitter. I don't know what Blake Sabol is. Blake Sabol may not be a professional at anything. So they had options. They had options in the offseason. They kind of chose to ignore it. I think they kind of went the cheap route and, you know, just plucked this guy from the Yankees and said, oh yeah, as long as he hits 200 and plays good defense, you know, behind Connor Wong, we'll be okay. They didn't, you know, I guess they didn't plan for Connor Wong being out for 6 weeks early in the year. So again, just bad roster management, bad planning, and it's coming back to bite them in the ass.
You know? Could you imagine having Gary Sanchez and Aroldis Chapman on the same roster?
Yeah.
And I was for Sanchez, for the record. I thought backup catcher, give Casas every fourth or fifth game off. I saw a ton of value having Sanchez as long as he could behave himself. And I haven't really, he's been with the Padres, been with the Brewers. I haven't really heard any controversies really. He seems to be settled in. So, but man, he could do a lot of damage. And I mean, your best right-handed at bat, I still think it's Christian Campbell, but we'll see. But I mean, Sanchez easily could have been your second best ahead of Story. And I don't know. That was a missed opportunity for the Red Sox there.
Yeah. I mean, Baltimore's going for a World Series this year. They felt it was right to bring him in. So, you know, they had no problems with it. I don't know why the Red Sox couldn't, but yeah, they're going to be paying for it for the next, like Nick said, at least 6 weeks. And you hope that's all it is at this rate, because catcher with a broken finger, usually not a good combination. So we'll see on that one. Moving on to number three on our bottom five, and this is going to be Alex Bregman. First time he's on the bottom five. Hopefully it doesn't happen too much more, but he was wretched this series. 2 for 15 at the plate, 2 more errors. He should have had 3. The Fenway scorekeeper played a little homerism on a ground ball that Vlad Jr. hit to him that, once again, he threw in the dirt. Casas couldn't dig it out. But I guess they determined that Guerrero was close enough to the base that they gave him the base hit. I thought it was an error because, and even Middlebrooks on the broadcast said it. He said, you know, if Casas picks that, Guerrero's out by a good step or two. So definitely some home cooking going on. But yeah, Bregman's already up to 4 errors on the year. And, you know, you brought this guy in, you moved Devers off of third base, and you made this big deal about, well, our defense needs to be better. And this guy's a better defender than Devers. And look, there are balls that Bregman has gotten to early this season that I don't think Devers would. So I'm not sitting here telling you they made a mistake necessarily, but it's got to be better than this. I mean, you bring this guy in to play good defense at third. You know, the bat, he's been off to a good start. So I'll forgive him for a slow series because the rest of the team sucked too. But the defense has got to be way better. I mean, you can't keep spiking, you know, throws into the dirt like this. And I'm tired of the excuse, well, it's cold. And they have trouble gripping the ball because it's cold. Like, Toronto didn't have that much of an issue. They threw the ball around a little bit the last game, but Toronto played pretty stout defense the whole series. You didn't. And Bregman was a big part of that. So, and I'm sorry, but a guy who has played in the major leagues for 10 years, you know, has won a gold glove, should know how to adapt to cold weather and learn how to get a good grip on the ball so he's not throwing it in the dirt. It's just, it shouldn't be that much of an adjustment. And look, you know, Cora brought it up. People complaining about the cold weather. He's like, how do you think Fenway's going to be in October? If that's the goal, we want to play in October, it's going to be cold then too. So, you know, hopefully Bregman's not one of these, you know, soft kids. You know, he's played in a dome his whole career, right? I'm sure they shut the roof in Houston for April and October. So, you know, does the cold weather get to him? I hope not, because it's not what you should be paying for. But yeah, definitely not a good series from him. Too many throws landing in the dirt. And they said on radio, it's so true, Rafael Devers has to be watching this from the dugout and just has like the big Grinch smile every time, you know, one of those goes in the dirt and can't get picked at first base. He's just sitting there like, oh, really? I was told I was horrible. I would have made that throw. So again, it's just, it's just breeding more problems that you don't need. And hopefully Bregman figures it out, picks it up, but definitely a rough, rough series for him. Nick, what did you think of Bregman these 4 days?
He wasn't good. The throws have been bad. I still think he's better than Devers, obviously, over there at third base. And I think he will improve. But the throws, even going back to the Cardinals series, he threw one in the right field in the last game. I think it was the last game. He threw one in the right field, which could have been an out, or I think it was the ninth inning. So it's just disappointing when you brought this guy in to shore up your defense and he can't make the throws. And I know one of them was Romy Gonzalez. It was a pretty easy pick, and he didn't pick it. But you got to make the throw. Hit Romy Gonzalez in the chest. At least don't make a guy who's not even a first baseman dig it out. I know Casas missed one today. But you got to at least get the ball out of the dirt, you know. I'd rather even be the high one where you got to jump up and slap the tag. I think one of those happened this series as well. But I expect better out of a guy who's making $40 million a year.
That error, that was in the first inning of last night's game, game 3, when the run scored.
The one,
there were a bunch. I think there was one early. Yeah.
I think that was the one because Vladimir was the one who came in. And had that happened, he probably doesn't end up scoring. The third out probably happens in that first inning, and they don't score, and that would mean the Red Sox would have won the game 1-0. So that whole thing got started because Bregman made a bad throw. And we're not going to talk about Casas tonight, but he's not a good first baseman. They have to be better because he's not going to save them. He's not going to be Scoops McGee at first base and, you know, and saving their bad throws. So they need to be on point, and not a good situation for Bregman. And it wasn't this series. I want to say it was in Baltimore or Texas. It was a game that we lost, and Devers kept the game alive, got on base. There was a runner in scoring position, two outs in the ninth. Bregman came up and struck out, and it was very uninspired looking at bat. So it seems like Devers lately has been a lot more clutch, you know, from the Baltimore series forward than Bregman has. And there was a picture I saw, I think somewhere on Facebook, and Devers and Bregman both came home, and Bregman was trying to give Devers a high five, and it was very awkward. And maybe it was just the picture. I don't know. But Devers, I don't know if he really was crazy about it. But so I don't know. But it seems like that's been put to bed anyway. But we'll see. You know, Bregman, like you said, Jason, has to be better. If we were sold all winter long that Bregman was going to save the Red Sox on the left side of the infield, we better start seeing it.
Yeah, 100%. And at the plate, too. I mean, I feel like every at bat, he's popping the ball up. Like, he feels like he's very early on his swing, and it's a lot of pop-ups lately. So, again, don't know if that's just the weather, and he's still adjusting to that. And eventually, in May and June, he's going to start driving the ball again. But, yeah, bad offensive series and very bad defensive series for him. So, first time on the list. We'll see if he makes it any other times. Coming up with number two on our bottom five, Nick, who do we got?
I got Christian Campbell just for the same reason. The defense at second base just was disappointing. And I'll give him more slack than Bregman. Bregman's won a gold glove in the major leagues. He was brought in here to shore up the defense. We knew Campbell was going to be a little bit of a struggle defensively, but it was mental mistakes today where he could have just stepped on the bag and thrown it to first base, and it would have been an easy double play instead of having to wait for Story, and then Story threw it away. He also dropped a pop-up in the crochet start, I think, in the last inning. And then he also made another throwing error, which kind of broke that game open for the Blue Jays as well. So he didn't get called for all these errors, but he definitely had some mishaps out there in the field, which, you know, you kind of expect that of a 22-year-old. But I want better out of him. I want him to stick at second base. I don't need to put him in left field or center field anymore. Put him at second base. That's what you paid him to do. Let him get reps there. Let him get comfortable there. He's not going to get comfortable anywhere else without playing there. So he had a few hits. I think he broke his reach base streak to start his career yesterday. So I think offensively he's been fine, but defensively he needs to improve. He was bad this series. It might have cost him the game, at least the crochet start. And today it almost cost him with that not stepping on second base and throwing it the first.
Terry.
Yeah, it's been a bummer that he hasn't been able to sustain the offense that we saw in Texas. And I guess realistically, you know, he wasn't going to, but just maybe one or two more key hits in the series would have been nice. And like Nick said, I mean, he's got to figure it out. There's no solutions beyond him. There's no, you're all in basically with Campbell at second base, unless you want Hamilton in there, and I don't. So keep him at second, keep giving him more reps. I don't see a future for him as an outfielder unless you're going to do something with Rafaela. I don't know. The thing I meant to mention earlier about Rafaela is his saving grace is he's a righty. If he's a lefty, there's no place for him on the Boston Red Sox. So that's kind of keeping Rafael in play, but just more reps for Campbell. I mean, he looks like an athletic kid. So I think he'll be fine. But when you put him in the outfield, that's less reps at second. And I don't think that's doing anybody any good. Making errors today and, well, not officially, but misplaying the ball in big spots. And, you know, it was costly, and it's going to continue to be if we don't get consistent with him.
Yeah, stop putting him in center field. That's a waste of his time. It's a waste of your time. You know he's your future second baseman. That's what you paid him for. So, you know, stop putting him in center field. He doesn't look comfortable out there. He barely looks comfortable at second. I mean, I feel like he's going to get Trevor Story killed one of these days with the hesitation and the bad, you know, feeds to second base on double plays. Like, and Lord knows, Trevor Story doesn't need any more damage coming his way. So, yeah, they've got to clean that up. Because, and I'm glad Middlebrooks called it out. Like, that was a bad play by Campbell. Like, you can't start towards the bag, then hesitate, because Trevor Story is coming full speed to help you out. If you hesitate, you put him in a really awkward position where now he's going to make a bad throw and, you know, it completely sailed on him. And, you know, Story got the error, but that really should have been on Campbell. And look, the bat was a little quiet this series as well from him. So, you know, and he's a rookie. You're going to go through that. You're going to go through some growing pains, especially at the plate. But defensively, he's got to at least be able to field a position with some sort of competency. And he looks really rough at second base right now. And, you know, we complained earlier about David Hamilton's defense, but Hamilton might be at least a little bit of a step above him right now, at least defensively. And maybe that's part of why Cora is putting him on the bench and putting Hamilton in games. Maybe he's saying, look, I need my best defensive infield out there right now because we just lost three in a row, you know, or if we're losing 2-3 in a row, I need to stabilize the defense here. If Campbell's out there with the yips and he's making bad throws and bad feeds, then Cora's going to get fed up with that real fast. So they've got to clean it up defensively all around, but Campbell especially, you know, he's just got to be a little more confident in feeling the position. And look, again, that's on the organization. Stick him at second base and stop putting him in the outfield. Stop asking him to be, you know, a super utility everyday player. Just make him your everyday second baseman and stick with it. And eventually he'll probably get more comfortable. So defensively, I think he'll improve. With the bat, I mean, I think you're going to go through this, the ups and downs with him, but this is definitely not a banner series for him at the plate either. So look, he's a rookie. They extend him pretty early. I think we're all pretty happy about it, but get ready for series like these where he's just not going to look fully ready. And, you know, he was highly accelerated to big leagues. We keep bringing it up, but, you know, last year he was in high A and then accelerated all the way up. So, you know, don't expect him to be a full-grown major leaguer just yet.
Real quick, so somebody referenced this with another player. I don't think it was Campbell, but you go back to 2014 when Bogaerts was up. That was essentially his rookie year. And John Farrell kept putting him at third, sometimes at short, sometimes at third. And Will Middlebrooks either was hurt or he just wasn't playing well. So that's why Xander would end up at third at times. And Xander, and I think even Scott Boras got involved. Like, listen, I'm a shortstop. You got to keep me at my one position. I'm not going to get better with defense unless I'm consistently playing my position. And I think back to the Francona era, even beyond that. I mean, remember the lineup was the same every night, or the positions were, rather. Maybe occasionally they'd get flipped in the lineup, but you knew what your outfield was, you knew what your infield was, and it seldom ever got messed with. And I feel like if you're constantly messing with it the way Alex Cora messes with it, your team's just not that good. So I don't want to say versatility is overrated, but I think consistency is starting to be underrated here. Like, we need to be consistent with these guys. So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you could have a lot of, you know, decent players that you can flip around and put in different positions, but you kind of want just a 1-9 of really good players that you know where they're going to play. And that's the end of it. So,
yeah, pinch hit guys late, that's fine. You know, use Romy in certain spots, use Ref Snyder in certain spots. But for the first 6 or 7 innings, just keep them where they're supposed to be. Don't mess with them.
Yep.
In my opinion, the only bench player that should get somewhat consistent bats is Rob Ref Snyder. He's the only one. David Hamilton doesn't need to be found at bats. Romy Gonzalez does not need to be found at bats. And your backup catcher, I know they're both bad offensive catchers at this moment, but he doesn't need to be found at bats. The only one that deserves to be found at bats is Rob Refsnyder. He's proven it. You paid him. And I trust him. I don't want Romy Gonzalez to go out there and have 200, 300 at bats this season. No, he doesn't deserve it. I mean, and he's not going to – he's going to play first base for Tristan Casas. Tristan Casas is not a great first baseman, but he's way better than Romy Gonzalez. Romy Gonzalez is too small. He's not a big target. There was one play that he kind of like he should have made. He would have stretched. He's a right-handed first baseman, so he was going to go to like the right field side. But if he stretched, he would have been hit by the runner, and the runner would have just taken him out. But I think Tristan Casas is a big enough guy that he could have gone out there, stretched, and held his own, you know, and that would have been an out. I think it was when Christian Campbell made his error, the throwing error. Up the hole, but yeah, Romy Gonzalez doesn't need to be put in the first base, so I stick with Rob Refsnyder is the only one that should be found at bats.
Yeah, and Refsnyder proved last year that he's not just a lefty killer, he can hit righties too, so he's not a one-trick pony. Like he does pretty well against right-handers as well. Obviously he thrives against lefties, but he can hit righties too. So yeah, I agree. If Cora needs to, you know, quote unquote find at bats, or guys need to get looks, Refsnyder is the one you defer to, not Romy Gonzalez, who, let's remind people, the White Sox didn't want Romy Gonzalez. So that should tell you all you need to know there. So speaking of decisions with the roster and decisions with the lineup, that brings us to number one on our bottom five. Terry, take it away.
That is going to be Alex Cora. And right away, game one, it was a historically cold night, and Garrett Crochet was having a hard time gripping the ball. He was battling and kind of keeping the Blue Jays at bay. And I think it was the sixth inning, things started going a little bit sideways on him. And I kept watching the pitch count get higher and higher. And I didn't like the fact that in his previous start, he had right around 100 pitches or maybe just over. It was right there. And I'm thinking in his second start, I'm like, man, that's kind of reckless. That would have been the Baltimore series, I think. And I think we got to win that game, but the dude just had Tommy John and you just paid him $170 million. And then skip back to this game. It's cold out. He can't grip the baseball. What are we doing? That's just not smart. That's an extremely reckless way to handle your newly signed ace. And I watched that pitch count get higher, and then you look at the bullpen, nobody's warming. Nobody's warming. And then finally, the inning starts getting sideways, runners start getting on. I'm on the road, as everyone can see. I'm in a hotel right now. I took my notes last night like I normally do, and then I left the damn thing home. I was halfway up Interstate 95, and I'm like, did I put that in my bag? And then I didn't pull over to check. I was too late anyway. So I don't have his lineup. I want to say he gave up 4 runs, but that's absolutely Alex Cora's fault. He should have taken care of him, should have got him out of there. And then Zach Kelly was the next guy. He was left in for 35, 40 pitches all throughout the series. I mean, it just wasn't a good series for Cora. And I'm neutral on Alex Cora, and there's nothing that can happen this year that's going to make me put up fire Cora hashtags, but things can get sideways here. And I'll say this, we're capable of 90 to 95 wins. That's what this team is built as. Breslow gave Cora the pieces. So what I'm saying is, for the first time in a long time, it's not on the front office anymore. It's on Alex Cora. It's on him to take care of his players, to utilize the bench. I mean, we were just talking about the defense and when guys come in, who should get at bats. And I just, for a guy that's been around as long as he has, you know, I don't know if the game speeds up on him too quickly and he's just not prepared in certain spots, but I'm starting to put him back into the overrated category. Not the worst manager. And again, I'm never going to hate him like I hated John Farrell, but he's got to be better than this.
Nick.
I thought it was very irresponsible what he did to Crochet and Kelly that night. I think with Crochet, he kind of just thought he was going to keep cruising and get through that sixth inning. Oh, there's no need to warm anybody up. But the fact that he let him, I think he had 107 pitches, which is his career high. And there was no sense of urgency to take him out. And he was faltering out there. He was just dying. He only got charged for one earner out of the four runs. So he kind of got screwed on a Campbell and a Bregman error. But you got to have somebody prepared and ready, at least warming in that situation when he's approaching 100 pitches. It's freezing out. And then you bring in Zach Kelly to finish off the inning. He got one out to finish the sixth. And then they brought him up to – it's tough enough of reliever to go inside, sit down in the dugout when it's 35 degrees, get back up, and then go back and sit down again, and then get back up again. Besides Whitlock, what other reliever goes two innings in our bullpen? None. And then Coral wanted Kelly to go over two innings, or at least try to. It didn't work out, but I don't blame him for that when he had almost 40 pitches. I just think it was irresponsible. I kind of thought after seeing that Kelly outing, he was going down to Worcester, and I'm going to call someone else up. I thought that was the only reason they would use him in that way. But we haven't seen him since. So it was game one of the series, and they kind of just made him useless until the rest of the series. So hopefully we'll see him again soon. But there was no reason to just waste a reliever at 40 pitches like that and do that to Crochet in a winnable game. I think if you take Crochet out, I think that was a manageable game that you could still won if you had somebody warming and you were prepared. I just don't think he was prepared in that moment. And I usually really like Alex Cora, but I've been disappointed, at least in this series. He's done a lot of questionable things, like playing Romy Gonzalez, David Hamilton getting starts. There's no reason for Campbell to play outfield. I just think there's a lot of things that we've already said that all relate back to Alex Cora, and he had a very disappointing series.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely a bad series for Alex Cora. The Garrett Crochet thing was really irresponsible. I mean, this guy has one full season of MLB pitching under his belt. That's it. And he did it last year. Otherwise, he's barely pitched. Even in college, he barely pitched. He only totaled like 60 innings in his two years in college before he had to have the surgery. You know, he barely pitched in the minors. The White Sox brought him up really quick, you know, and he was a reliever for a little bit when they first brought him up, got hurt, came back, and, you know, was a starter, full-time starter, really, for the first time last year. And that's where he threw 146 innings. And, you know, yeah, he was one of the best pitchers in the American League, but he doesn't have a track record of, you know, innings pitched. And you're going to leave him out there in a game in April where the weather's terrible and you're going to make him go until he's got his new career high in pitches in a single game. And, you know, as you mentioned, with no one warming up, that made no sense. It's like, yes, he's your ace, but, you know, don't abuse that power that you have with him now. I mean, you still got to manage him a little bit. I'm not saying that, you know, you got to Blake Snell him and pull him out of the, you know, by the fifth or sixth inning every single start, but you also can't rely on him to be your John Lester-like workhorse. He hasn't proven he can do that yet. He hasn't proven that he can do back-to-back seasons of 30-plus starts, 180 innings. He hasn't shown it. And until he does, you've kind of got to treat him with kid gloves, at least for a little bit, at least to the point where he goes out, you know, if he's at 90 to 95 pitches, you start getting someone loose and you get ready to take him out. You don't just throw him out there for another inning because, well, he's our ace and he can get through it. Like, no, you can't do that. Not in year one, not after the amount of money that the organization has just committed to him. You know, I'm sure there were people in the front office that were watching that, you know, having the same reaction we were. They're probably sitting there going, Alex, what are you doing here, buddy? We just committed a lot of money to this guy. Like, let's not have him, you know, overextend, you know, in this frozen night at Fenway for no reason. It was stupid. So I hated that game. I hated that he sat Abreu and Casas against a left-hander that nobody had heard of. This Easton Lucas, who granted, like, pitched really well, but no one had heard of this guy. He's a 28-year-old journeyman. It's not like you're out there against Tarik Skubal, where you go, okay, this is a tough lefty. We gotta give Abreu, you know, a blow here. No, it's some journeyman. Like, put them back in the lineup. And by the way, you said at the beginning of the year that Casas would play against righties and lefties. And you sat him against a lefty again. Willie Abreu, you know, you keep saying, well, we have to put our trust in him and let him show that he can hit lefties. And as soon as you run into a lefty, you put him on the bench. And Grant, I get it. You want to get Rob Refsnyder in there. And as Nick mentioned earlier, Refsnyder has earned that, especially against left-handed pitchers. That's the guy you want in your lineup. But Romy Gonzalez, we need Romy Gonzalez in the lineup against a division rival in a game that you kind of need. You kind of need to win early on. I hated that decision too. So again, it's Cora trying to, you know, push buttons that he doesn't need to push. I think he looks at the schedule. He looks at the lack of days off early on. And he goes, well, you know, I can't have these guys playing 3-4 games in a row. That's just, you know, they're going to get hurt or something bad's going to happen. You know, I got to get Romy Gonzalez off the bench because Lord knows the world will end if Romy Gonzalez doesn't get at bats early in April. I mean, I don't know what we'll do, guys. It's just he overreacts to the schedule way too much, and he overreacts to pitching matchups way too much instead of just trusting his players a little bit more. You know, Tristan Casas can hit lefties. Willie Abreu has shown that he's starting to be able to hit lefties. He's, you know, Abreu's been pretty much your best player for the first couple of weeks here. And you're putting him on the bench just because some no-name lefties on the mound, like, that made no sense. So between the crochet thing, between the lineup, between the obsession over getting David Hamilton in there when you don't have to, moving guys around different positions, you know, one day Cam's at second, the next day he's in center. It just, the whole thing has been kind of a mess. So, and I don't know, again, it's just Cora panicking because of the schedule and the lack of days off, but he's got to get his head right, because if the team on the field is already kind of struggling and, you know, making some mental lapses, you can't have the guy at the wheel doing it too. So Cora's got to get his head out of his you-know-what and start managing like we know that he can.
So I did a Twitter poll, just kind of getting some data on where our followers stand. Surprisingly, 74% are favorable towards Cora. I expected it to be about 60-40, with 60 being in favor of him. I just remember last year, we all blamed everything on the front office. I mean, we didn't have a good rotation from the start. I mean, they did make some moves at the deadline, but they weren't sexy and none of them worked out anyway. You know, Paxton blew out whatever it was in the third start, and then they went and got Rich Hill for the 11th time in franchise history. You know, so a lot of people were blaming Cora at that point. And when, in my opinion, it was on Breslow and Kennedy, you know, and so I was kind of surprised that they were choosing that battle, but right now it seems like more favorable towards Cora, and that's fine. I'm still in the neutral category. I don't know if he's the best manager though. I mean, I'm always going to put Francona above him. And last I checked, the Reds weren't doing super great. They were two or three games under 500, but not that they're, I mean, I did pick them to win the division, but it's not the most cut and dry division either. But I don't know. I just feel like there are better managers out there for sure. You know, so we'll see. We'll see.
Nick, did you have any other thoughts on Cora?
Today, the final game of the series, he brought in Justin Wilson, I think in the seventh to relieve Buehler. And then he brought in Whitlock in the eighth. And then he took out Whitlock in the ninth. And I know Cora has said recently that he's going to use Whitlock no matter what for two innings. And he's going to get 2 days off. Why not bring Whitlock into the seventh and pitch the eighth? And stop lying to us. Just like with Tristan Casas is going to face lefties. Willie Abreu is going to get more chances against lefties. You know, I think that was the perfect opportunity for Whitlock. After, I think Walker Buehler walked the leadoff guy and then he got an out and they pulled him. and they brought in Wilson. They instantly gave up a run. That was the right opportunity to bring in Whitlock. He would have got two innings, and then he could have gone to Chapman in the ninth. And I think they would have set the bullpen way better today. And then you have the White Sox coming up, and then you probably can give them 2 days off. But I'm just sick of like them telling us one thing and another thing happening, because Whitlock only went one inning today. And I know they said recently he's going to go two no matter what.
The other thing too, and we don't have to really get too much into this, but it hasn't been his best year as far as managing the personalities, managing delicate situations. I mean, Masataka Yoshida is still getting told he's going to play in the outfield. I mean, Devers, that whole debacle, like I said, it finally feels like that is in the rearview now, but it was messy for quite a while. And, you know, so that's, and Alex Cora, one of his strengths is handling the media. And so it just has not been a good season for him in many respects.
Yeah, it's been a rough start. And that's a great point to bring up. Like even the behind the scenes stuff where people call Cora, you know, this great politician. And look, in years past, he has been. He's done a good job of managing personalities. He gets close to his players, does a good job of, you know, soothing their egos when they need it, challenging guys when they need that. But yeah, I mean, he wasn't great with the whole Devers Bregman situation. There was a lot of, you know, talking out of both sides of his mouth there. And now he's doing it in season with, you know, the Abreu Casas platooning with, as Nick mentioned, Whitlock's innings and how he's being used. It's just, it's a lot of talking out of both sides. And I think when you're a guy like Cora, when you're a manager and you're trying to, you know, do what's best for the team every single inning, every single at bat, you shouldn't be just making definitive statements like, yep, Whitlock will only pitch two innings no matter what, and that's how we're going to use him. Like, if there's going to be different situations, then don't say that. Because then, yeah, it does come off as you don't have command at the wheel here, and you're kind of flying by the seat of your pants. If you don't want Abreu and Casas facing a tough lefty, then don't say they're going to play against both righties and lefties. Because then when you bench him, we all sit here and go, what the hell? Like, what happened to what you said in spring training, what you've been saying all offseason? So I think Cora just kind of makes these promises and makes these, like, definitive statements when he doesn't have to. You're the manager of the team. You can do whatever you want with the lineup card. But don't sit there and tell us one thing and then do something completely different once game time rolls around. That's where the messaging gets lost, and that's where your players are going to get confused too, because they hear it. You know, Abreu and Casas, they hear, oh yeah, we're going to get our opportunities against lefties. And then some no-name 28-year-old is on the mound and they look at the lineup card and they go, oh, I guess we're not playing today. Okay, cool. Like that's going to start, you know, leading players to go, what the hell's going on here? So I just think he needs to, you know, stop telling the media, this is what I'm going to do. Just go do it. Go do whatever you're going to do and do what's best to win the baseball game. But stop running Garrett Crochet into the ground, first and foremost, please. Like, we just signed the guy. Can we not run him into the ground by June 1st? It just, that game was enraging. So
another thing, Aroldis Chapman's been very good. No complaints. But eventually he's not going to be very good, I think. Inevitably, he's going to have that rough patch. Will probably lose his job. I don't hate the way Whitlock's being utilized overall. I know it wasn't great this series, but the general concept of him pitching two innings in key spots is okay with me. But I think he is the best reliever in that pen and probably should be the closer. So we'll see what happens. We'll see how, when the Chapman stuff goes sideways, how will Cora manage that?
Absolutely. Any final thoughts on this Toronto series before we put this one to bed? All right, cool. Well, we will be back with another episode of Hot Takes coming your way. Or no, excuse me, Clown Takes. Clown takes. Not Hot Takes. Yeah, the opposite. Clown Takes coming your way this weekend. We'll also have our predictions show for the White Sox series coming up this weekend as well. And then the Weekend Crew will be back with you guys Monday morning. They will recap that Chicago White Sox series for you. So everyone have a great weekend, and we'll see you later. Take care.